This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
And many thanks to Baylen Spector, who just joined us. Wes, we have more guests, though, coming up this hour in addition to all the other topics we're going to throw on you.
Yeah, Andrew Pannenberg will join us. He's the goalie for Wake Forest men's soccer. Of course, off to just a great start this year in a league that is full of great teams. We're looking forward to our visit with Andrew. And Tim Hasselbeck will be with us. He and Dave O'Brien and Katie George will have Virginia and Miami in primetime. ACC Network Primetime Football presented by GEICO Saturday night from the Hard Rock in South Florida against the Canes. But we start the hour. We will get to a call at 844-SAY-ACCN here in a moment. Who needs a win the most, Pack, on Saturday? You got three choices here. Louisville, Virginia, or Pittsburgh?
The answer is all the above, but I know you're not going to let me get by with that. Because I like that accounting test, I would have picked D, and that would have been, even though correct, it would have been marked X. I'm going to say Louisville, and I'm going to tell you why. Because they've lost four straight in the league, and when I looked at those three teams, again, Pitt's been a disappointment in losing those one-point games because I thought they'd beat NC State. I thought they'd beat Boston College. They did neither, and really kind of put them behind the eight ball. But Louisville, to me, was a team that I thought could get to the ACC championship game if everything fell right. And while I had huge expectations for Pitt, I thought Virginia's quarterback question would have to be answered, and it's still trying to be answered. Louisville, to me, of those three, Wes, is the team that if you told me 2 months ago, hey, they're going to be 1-4, I would have said, you're out of your mind. What are you talking about? I didn't expect them to be in this position. And now they're going to take on a Florida State team. As I pointed out, they got their signature win and their momentum boost with the knockdown of North Carolina on Saturday night. Of the three, if I got a pick, and again, I think all of them desperately need one, I would go with the Cardinals here. I think they're the ones that just need to win a conference game. I mean, they're at 0-4. They're the only team in the league who's yet to win a conference game, and I would have never thought that in a million years 2 months ago.
I'm going to go with the Panthers. And the reason being is Pittsburgh has lost three straight now, two by a point and one by 12 on Saturday at Miami without Kenny Pickett at the wheel. They have Notre Dame, and then they have a bye week. Remember when we did the redo schedule 2.0 and we talked about playing those games pack and then having the bye week? Remember how late it was and how tough the schedule got as the year went on? Pittsburgh goes bye after this week and then goes at Florida State, at Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech at home, and at Clemson. Oof. I mean, there will be no relief for the Panthers. And this is something we discussed early on, remember? I mean, there will be no relief here in the way this schedule is built. It was an uphill climb from the very start. And, yeah, Florida State has looked improved the other night. Georgia Tech has won enough against Louisville and Florida State to, despite what happened last Saturday, you don't think the Jackets will be in that rut for long, if you will. Virginia Tech is maybe one of the best three teams in this league for sure. You know, we don't know yet. We got to have a little more comparison of the Hokies. And we know what Clemson is. Saturday becomes enormous for Pittsburgh when you start looking ahead. And we can do that. Coaches and players can't. But we can look ahead. And, Mark, I'm telling you, it's going to be hard to find another one if you don't get one Saturday.
It feels like a Super Bowl game for Pitt. Hey, all in, man. This is one you got to get and stop the bleeding. We knew the schedule after all those home games early. They're going to be a ton of road trips, right? We talked about they're the second most traveled team in the ACC with the revamped schedule. The defense has just not closed deals. I go back to NC State. I go back to BC. They weren't able to score in the red zone against Miami. They had chances in that game too. So this is a really important game. All three of these teams, Virginia at Miami this weekend. The Hoos have lost three in a row. They've got to figure out a way to stop the bleeding too. And again, who knows what's going to happen at quarterback. like I told you, Wes, I think the answer to the question is all three. They all desperately need a W.
Yeah.
But I still go back to Louisville, though, because I just thought the mindset of what Satterfield accomplished in year one was sensational, way ahead of schedule. I don't think anybody saw that coming. And the expectation level was, man, you got Cunningham back there. You got Tutu Atwell. You got Des Fitzpatrick. You got Hawkins running the ball. They're going to be explosive. Right. They're going to score a ton of points. And if the defense gets a little bit better, man, watch out. Schedule kind of favorable as well. I'll say it again. I just never imagined the Cards in this position. And it's not like, hey, guys have been hurt and banged up on an offense where they just haven't scored. I mean, they scored 7 points last week. And I know Notre Dame's defense is good, but Louisville should be able to score more than a touch against anybody. I don't care who they're playing. And Florida State offers an incredible challenge because, like I said, the Noles are finally playing with some confidence. They certainly did Saturday night, and they got to be feeling good. I think all three of these teams we're talking about and kind of highlighting here, Virginia, Louisville, and Pitt, desperate doesn't probably do it justice in terms of how important it is to somehow find a way to win the game. And every one of them are going to be challenged beyond belief in every sense of the word. Only Louisville is favored of this group coming up this weekend.
It's also the time of the year, too, Mark, right, where we get the unexpected. Remember last year when, like, Louisville went to Miami and everybody thought Louisville was rolling and, you know, playing great in Scott Satterfield's first year, and all of a sudden Miami, you know, hit a groove offensively and put, what, 50 on them?
Yeah,
I mean, this is that time of year now. Late October, early November, you get those, you know, it's always the quiet, innocent Saturday on paper that turns into upheaval in college football, right?
Well, you also get, Wes, the point of the season that, you know, when you look at these games, Louisville and Florida State, do I think either one can get to Charlotte? Right. No, I do not. So where's the want to? I see the want to with Florida State because they showed it to me Saturday night. I mean, that to me was like their moment of, hey, chips are all in. Let's go. We've got to show something here. And they did. They played with energy and passion and had fun. And they just absolutely wore North Carolina out the first 30 minutes, going up 31-7, and then held on for the win. So you got that with Florida State. So I get a sense, sitting here in the basement with the dogs, that Florida State is still engaged and ready to play. With Louisville, right. I thought I got that Saturday. Their defense did a really, really nice job. Listen, if you'd have told Satterfield before the game, hey, I promise you, Notre Dame's only going to score 12, he had to sit there and go, man, we're going to win this game. We're going to score more than seven, right? So I know that their players bought in what they were selling last week. Now they got to buy into doing it at home and winning a game, finally winning your first ACC game. You know, Virginia, they're not going to make it to Charlotte. You got three straight L's. That's not good enough. And Miami still has something to play with. So, you know, these are the kind of games that you're talking about. You find out the want to and character of football teams when, hey, are you still dialed in and want to play? Especially during this pandemic where the student athletes have made unbelievable sacrifices to at least be in a position to play. You start getting some of those answers this week in games like the ones we're talking about.
844-SAY-ACCN. Michael in Florida with Packer and Durham this morning. Michael.
Thank you for taking the call. Quick question. Do you guys feel Clemson is at the level when Miami had Dorsey, Andre Johnson, Santana Moss, Frank Gore, McGahee? Do you see this program at the level that Miami was at on, say, a decade run? And I'll hang up and listen. And thank you very much for taking my call. And at this point, Miami's the only team that has really challenged Clemson, although the score did not indicate that. And where do you think they stand right now in their credibility? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you for the call. Right. Thanks for watching. Thanks, and listening. Well, the early Miami teams, Wes, in my opinion, will go down in history in terms of pure talent when you start talking about who went to the next level. And obviously the Canes, you know, in terms of wins and losses and championships and all that stuff, all those boxes are checked. I don't know if Clemson has reached Miami's level of that level in terms of guys to the next level. I'm not sure anybody has. Period. Bama, LSU, you name them. I mean, Miami, those teams you're talking about in the early part of this century were ridiculous when you talk about, hey, 17 first-round picks and all that stuff. I mean, nobody's doing that. But in terms of the where we are in college football, I mean, Dabo's run here in the last 8 to 10 years, hey, it says what it is. I mean, there's Alabama and there's Clemson. And Ohio State's in the neighborhood. That's where it is. So the answer to the way Michael phrased the question in the picture of the big picture of college football is yes, they have. I mean, they've won 2 out of 4. They've been to 5 straight college football playoffs. Double-digit winning seasons. How many of those you want in a row? I mean, you know, the record against top 25 teams, I think, is what, 22-3 the last 25? I mean, the numbers get to be goofy. 47 straight wins on Saturdays, 36 straight regular season games. I mean, after a while, your eyes cross, right? You go, oh, my God, they never lose. So from that perspective, the answer is yes. As far as guys going to the next level, first-round picks, the answer is no. But I'm not sure anybody in college football matched what Miami did in the early part of this century.
Pac, I know we talked about this a little bit when we came back on the air in June and we spent some of the summer months doing comparative studies, right, of greatest teams and that kind of deal. To me, and Michael may be a Miami fan, maybe not, I don't know, it doesn't matter. In this discussion, though, you almost have to isolate the Miami teams of the early 2000s, the ones he's talking about, with the Florida State teams of the 90s in terms of draft inventory.
Right.
Okay? I mean, now, the Florida State teams of the early 90s, like, had 22 starters, of which, like, 19 were first-round picks. You're mentioning Miami had, what, 17 first-round picks off a starting unit in 2000? Was that right?
I don't know what 2000, the number is. But
right?
Yeah, I don't know what – off the top of my head, crazy. I just said 17. But the number is so astronomical that you kind of go, well, that's not physically possible that a college football team could acquire that kind of talent, but they did.
That's right. Now you get to an element where some of this has changed, where the way, number one, programs are built is different. You have the transitive property now in college football, which unlike 20, 25 years ago, you didn't have that. You had it occasionally. You didn't have the massive portal situations or grad moves that you have now. But here's the deal. In this world we're in, the last 5 years of the college football playoff, there are two. Okay? And there are only two, and Pac's exactly right. It's Clemson, Alabama, Alabama, Clemson, 1A, 1B, however you want to stack it. You've got a lot of potential customers, of which Ohio State, I think, is the strongest bid in that line. And there's Georgia is certainly in the discussion. They've been to the college football playoff, lost in the title game.
Georgia's
not. Realistically, Pac, you're in a deal right now where it's Clemson, Alabama, Alabama, Clemson, depending on your cup of tea, and then potentially Ohio State right there with them, and that's it, right? In my mind, those are the three, and everybody beyond that is just trying to get in line to see if they can become the fourth team.
I would not put Georgia on that list. They can't beat Alabama. Oklahoma, I would put on there before I put Georgia. I mean, Oklahoma's at least dominated their league and made it to the college football playoff. And I know Georgia's one singular win in the college football playoff was against Oklahoma in the Rose Bowl in overtime, which was a great game. But to me, it's Clemson and Bama, and then there's a pause, and then underneath that's Ohio State. And the Buckeyes have owned the Big Ten. But I will emphasize this again. Ohio State won the first college football playoff. They haven't won a playoff game since. That was 2014.
Right.
It's now 2020. Don't give me Ohio State when I'm going to sit there and tell you, hey, Alabama's going to show you multiple titles. Clemson's going to show you multiple titles. They're in it every year, even though I know Bama wasn't in last year. But Ohio State hasn't matched that level, as good as they've been. And then under Ohio State, then you could throw in Oklahoma, who's been there a bunch, but they haven't won a college football playoff game. And Georgia, who obviously recruits well, can't beat Alabama, but they're really, really good. So to me, I think it's kind of a tier thing.
Yeah.
But that's it. That's the list. Cut it right there. And, you know, hey, I know LSU won it all last year, but right now LSU is going to be lucky to finish 500 this year. So welcome to reality. I mean, these other teams have been able to win consistently at that level for an extended period of time here during the playoff era.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Tim Hasselbeck coming up here in about 15 minutes, but we are going to switch gears on you a little bit. Wes, I was just telling you during the break, men's soccer, women's soccer, we brag about it so often on the show of how dominant the conference is. The latest rankings for the men, Pitt's number one, Wake's two, Clemson three, North Carolina five. Pitt number one for the first time ever. So four of the top five in the country from the ACC in the men. The women, the Heels are number one, Florida State two, Clemson three, Duke four, throw in Virginia and Louisville, ranked 10th and 13th respectively. Yep. So the top four in the country on the ladies, four of the top five on the men. That's crazy good. And speaking of crazy good, the goalkeeper for the Deacs, Andrew Pannenberg, joins us now. Andrew, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Doing well. How are you guys?
Oh, we're great, man. First of all, this league, as we were sitting here talking about, you just never catch a break. I mean, every time you go out to the pitch, you know you're playing quality. You saw it last week in the loss to Clemson, and then you had the huge win against North Carolina overtime. You really had to feel that, hey, we got to win this game, right? It's just as competitive as the league is, you just can't take a night off.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what you sign up for, though, when you come to Wake, when you play in the ACC. Just really good games every week, really good competition all the time.
Andrew, is there any kind of secret to the emergence of soccer in this conference? I mean, we just mentioned North Carolina schools, and we were talking during the break. You're from Charlotte, went to Ardrey-Kell. I mean, there's all sorts of different dynamics maybe in one state, but this league as a whole, I mean, I think a lot of people would be surprised to hear who maybe don't follow ACC soccer that Pittsburgh's like the number one team in the country. I mean, how does it develop across the board from a player's perspective?
Yeah, I definitely think there's always been a lot of talent in the ACC. Just growing up, I remember watching Wake Forest in 2007 when they won the national championship. And even back then, all the ACC games that they played were always just incredibly intense. And I think that culture is just still here today, and it's even grown and gotten better.
Andrew, we've talked a lot about the football guys, obviously because football is front and center. But all the student athletes for all the Olympic sports, fall, winter, spring, doesn't matter. During this pandemic, it has really taken an incredible effort just to be in a position to play. From a soccer perspective, if you don't mind, explain how difficult March through the middle of summer with the complete unknown of I don't know what's going to happen. And then all of a sudden, okay, we're going to get back to class, get back on campus. I think we're going to play. Maybe we are. Maybe we aren't. How difficult has that been from a physical standpoint and what you had to do even from a mental standpoint to still stay sharp, stay safe, and at least be in a position to just go out and play and compete?
Yeah, I would definitely say that the uncertainty part would probably be the biggest difficulty, just not knowing what was going to happen just within the next week or even couple days. But I think when it comes to the physical standpoint, it was actually – I mean, you can look at it as a blessing just to get more creative and to find new ways to get better and to find new people. I mean, I met a lot of my neighbors at the time during like the pandemic and stuff, and some really incredible people that like I met. Just like I had a neighbor, and he's a power lifter, and I got to work with him, and another neighbor who's he's in the UFC, and so just it was a blessing to be able to find new ways to get better instead of just what we've always done, which is just, you know, training. So just to kind of see getting better from a new perspective was nice.
All right, wait a second here. You opened the door on something I got to ask about. You have a neighbor that's a UFC fighter. You're a soccer goalie. How does the UFC fighter and the soccer goalie make each other better?
I mean, we would just work out together a little bit and just even just conversations and talking about experiences and what it's like for him and in his sport. And because, I mean, that's the highest level you can get for MMA. So just to be able to have someone so close in proximity, like just to my house, was a blessing just to even because I didn't even know him before. So just to meet him and to pick his brain and see his journey now, where he's going. Yeah, it was nice. It was awesome.
All right. Does that mean somebody crosses the face of the goal, they're going to get one in the chops?
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
I would think, though, that hand-eye coordination would come into play there, would it not? I mean, I could see what a fighter would work on that you sat there as a goalie going, hey, you know what? I can work on hand and foot moves here. This all that all coincides with being a great goalkeeper, does it not?
Yeah, absolutely. Tim Howard, I mean, arguably the greatest goalkeeper for the U.S. of all time. He did kickboxing in his off seasons, I remember hearing somewhere. So, yeah, I definitely think just from like a footwork perspective, hand-eye coordination, all that, it's a lot of crossover.
So with that said, as a follow-up, Andrew, when all of a sudden you've got a pandemic, you're a goalkeeper, what can you do that makes anything look like a typical practice? I mean, obviously, you got the goal. Okay, great, I got a soccer ball. What do you do in the middle of the summer when everybody's, you know, social distancing and wearing masks and, you know, staying inside? So, I mean, how do you approach that?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, just a lot of stuff at home in the garage as much as we could, just like footwork and jump rope. Those are two big things. But even getting out to a field, I was really lucky. I have a field right by my house, and just being able to connect with high level people too, like Claudia Dickey. She's the goalkeeper for UNC. We were able to train together, and I have a friend who's the starting goalkeeper for the USL team in Charlotte. So us three together, we would train whenever we could, whenever it was allowed to, and like being safe and social distance and all that. But just being able to like link up with those people again, like, and just picking their brains and seeing other people who play at a very high level. I mean, Claudia, they're number one in the country right now. So, yeah.
That's cool.
Andrew, has the normalcy of just playing matches helped this fall? I mean, I know there's no national championship, at least right now. There's a whole nother process that could unfold that way, maybe in the spring. But just the normalcy of playing really good high-level collegiate soccer, has that helped a little bit?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just from even when we came back, hearing all the other conferences that were starting to cancel and hearing all that uncertainty was pretty difficult. But just to be back and playing games once a week, and I mean, it feels as normal as it can, you know. Maybe there's less fans, but just having the games, having the competition, being around the guys, having like our normal game day routines and all that, just to be able to go through that has been a blessing. And we're very fortunate to be able to do that right now.
As a goalkeeper, who is the best offensive player in the league?
Oh.
I don't know. I think we definitely have some guys on our team that all of them are very, very good.
All right. So I'm going to give you a for instance, because there's a lot of folks that will sample ACC soccer on ACC Network because they hear us brag about how good the teams are. Give me a for instance where all of a sudden if I said to you, hey, your worst nightmare, it could be in practice. All right, so I'll allow you to pick one of your own guys here. Could be in practice. Your worst nightmare when there's a breakaway and you're like, okay, here we go, it's coming my way, is whom? Who's the person?
I can't say.
Oh.
We have a lot of talented guys on our team, a lot of talented attacking players. I think they're all equally capable of doing incredible things.
I am not letting you off that easy. This league is too good. All right, take everybody away from your team. You cannot pick a Demon Deacon. A non-Demon Deacon. Who is the one guy that you're like, oh, brother, here he comes off the wing. I got to make a play here. Who's the guy? Come
Honestly,
on.
Honestly, I can't hear
you.
Oh,
you. I'm telling you what.
Our defense is too good, so. There's no worry like that.
All right. Let me tell you something. I watched the Clemson game, dude. All right. I watched the Clemson game, Andrew. Just telling you. He's not going to tell me.
They definitely have a lot of talent.
I love it. All right. I'll give you a pass on this. Here is the toughest question you're going to say. Right here. The face right here. At Wake Forest, the hardest class you've ever had is what?
Oh my gosh, you're gonna have to make me think about that one. That's tough.
No, you gotta answer this one. You gotta answer this one. I'll let you pass on the other one. You gotta answer this one.
Huh.
The toughest class at Wake is what?
I mean, there's tough classes that I haven't taken, but I took a psychology class one time. It was pretty hard.
It wore you out, huh? All right. Well, listen.
Maybe a little bit.
Continued success. You guys are awesome to watch. The soccer in this league, phenomenal. And we appreciate you spending some time with us this morning.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
You got it. Andrew Pannenberg, goalkeeper for Wake Forest.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Even though there is a rumor that Clifford D. Cat might have gotten a hold of the internet connection down there in Cartersville, but we'll work on Wes. But that doesn't stop us from bringing on Tim Hasselbeck, who makes his weekly appearance every Wednesday at this time. Tim, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I can't complain. Let's get right to it. Miami and Virginia this week. It's one of about two or three games in the ACC where teams are kind of facing that point of the season that, hey, it's a grind. You've worked hard, but you're also on a losing streak. Kind of critical for Virginia to figure out this quarterback situation and somehow stop the bleeding against a really, really good Miami club.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. And it's a kind of surprise, you know, getting ready to, you know, do this game, just watching Virginia. You know, I think it's fair for us all to kind of operate with the assumption that, like, look, the quarterback position wasn't going to be as stable or productive as it was a year ago, and that they were going to be growing pains. But, you know, with Armstrong's injury, you know, that makes that kind of even more magnified. And so I think when that happens, you say, okay, well, how about the rest of the team? Are they good enough to kind of pick up the slack and pick everybody else up because of that? The offensive line should be better. You know, defensively, they've got a bunch of guys returning, and they've got experience in the secondary. And I think that's probably the thing that surprised me the most, is how much they have struggled on that side of the ball through this. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like somebody, some unit has to step up for Virginia.
And with that said, what do you think the answer is? I mean, who knows if Armstrong's good to go, because Bronco said even this week it's a medical protocol and he's got to figure that out. You know, when he's ready to go, he can go play. But so what is the answer to that question?
Yeah, so I think the answer is this, and Bronco's right. I mean, that's not just coach speak. The reality is he's got to be cleared. And then when he gets cleared, you know, I think that Brennan Armstrong's the guy. I think that is how they will operate, and I think that's how they should operate. Anytime we've talked to that coaching staff at Virginia about Armstrong, it's basically been, look, we're not going to evaluate him just after the Duke game. We're not going to evaluate him just after the Clemson game. This is going to be a long-range, you know, process, and we hope to see improvement each and every time out. So, you know, there's definitely been some good things to build on for Brennan Armstrong. And so I do think that when he is healthy, he's going to be the starting quarterback. Now, that doesn't mean he's the only guy that will take snaps. And I think what you saw last week, you know, basically playing three different guys, you know, Keaton Thompson and Armstead and Stone, you know, playing three guys was really, I think, what they've identified as the thing to kind of maybe just put the ball in their best athlete's hands. And so I think they continue to do that if Armstrong's out.
All right, the flip side is Miami. No Clemson hangover, even though they struggled early, but the objects to win the game. I thought their defense did a great job shutting Pitt down in the red zone. But what about the Canes now moving forward? Again, they still win out. You play yourself right back into a competition to be in an ACC championship game. They know what's in front of them. But what did you learn about their team last week as far as no hangover from Clemson?
Well, I think you asked me, Pack, last week. I think you said to me, like, you know, like you asked about the Clemson hangover. I mean, you see it. You know, everyone gets excited to play Clemson, and then you go in there and you play them, and, you know, they run you off of the field. And I think it's hard to swallow. And I think it would be especially hard to swallow if you're a program like Miami that expects to be kind of on that same level as Clemson. You know, the type of speed and athlete that you can recruit, the type of tradition in your program. So I think it's hard. So what I learned about them was that, look, they were able to kind of be a mentally tough team. I think Manny Diaz did a nice job with his team of getting them ready, you know, not facing Kenny Pickett. Like, that could have been kind of a bit of a trap letdown game, and, you know, it wasn't. So, and then I think to kind of to your other point, we were talking about this, you know, the group that we're calling the game this weekend. Look, for Miami, don't you think they're dying for another shot? Just, yeah. You know, there was that buildup to play Clemson. Like, that's what they want, and that's where they believe they belong. And, you know, if you think about what happened to North Carolina, you think that Notre Dame's got to see Clemson. Like, if you take care of business, there's a really good shot that Miami gets another crack at it.
I'd agree with that. De'Aaron King, obviously we knew how good he was at Houston. He jumps on the scene this year, makes a splash. Have you seen improvement with him throwing the football downfield? That's probably the only issue that I think anybody had with him as the season's progressed. Have you seen progress in that department?
Yeah, I think there's been some progress. It hasn't been, you know, as good as it had been at times, you know, before getting to Miami. And, you know, I called that UAB game to start the season, and that's really where he struggled. Now, I think there's a combination of a lot of these things for him. You know, sometimes for guys it clicks quickly with, you know, your receivers and your supporting cast. And, you know, I think in fairness to De'Aaron King, you know, he comes in, it's a brand new offense, it's brand new guys that he's working with, and he hadn't had the time to get a ton of work with them. So, and then on top of it, and I think that this is something that people have to remember when they talk about accuracy with guys that are also used as a runner, it's hard to, I mean, it's like shooting foul shots when you're tired versus when you're rested. Yeah. So I do think it's going to improve. I have seen some improvement. I mean, the first week, it basically didn't hit any. And so, you know, we've seen big plays in the passing game. I think we can continue to see some more.
Do you think that Cameron Harris and that stable of backs, they have a good day against Virginia? Because obviously, if you can run the football, it makes life really easy for your quarterback, as you well know.
Yeah, I think that Rhett Lashley has done a really good job of the run game. I feel like that's, you know, in many ways his expertise. So I just think they've done a nice job with that. Their tempo also helps quite a bit with that. And, you know, Virginia, while they do some good things defensively, and I know that, like, Zane Zandier has been talked about quite a bit. They'll use him on a fair amount of run blitzes and things of that nature. I just think that the tempo Miami plays with and just kind of continuing to kind of crack at it before you end up, you know, breaking one. I do think that there's a good chance that happens in this matchup.
Tim, Wes and I were just kicking around this particular weekend in the ACC. Florida State at Louisville. The Cardinals have not won an ACC game. You've got Virginia and Miami. We know about the Hoos losing three in a row. Pitt, who we just talked about as well, they've lost three straight. They've got Notre Dame coming to town. Of those three, Louisville, Virginia, Pitt, who is in the most desperate mode? And you can't say all the above because that's what I said and Wes wouldn't allow it. So if you've got to pick one of those three, where we are in the season coming up mid to late October, trying to stop the bleeding, getting this thing back on track, how would you answer that question?
I could say Louisville because I think that they've probably been the most disappointing based on how good last year was. And, you know, I had them a few times last year and talking to their coaching staff, a lot of it was, a lot of the optimism was predicated on, look, these guys are seeing the results, and so they're buying in. And, you know, that's true with college athletes. You know, you buy in when you are seeing the benefits. You're seeing it work. And I think that ends up being the challenge a little bit here is they're not seeing the benefits, and it's not working. And I'm not saying that locker room or anything's about to go sideways, but I just think the letdown of that is probably tough to swallow for so many of those players who had high expectations.
By the way, for the record, I answered the exact same thing with Louisville. So Wes got on my case about that. But, hey, you know what? We'll have to
say? Who did Wes say?
Wes was politically correct. He said, you know, all three of these teams have really interesting, important games. I'm like, you can't give me that nonsense. You got to pick one. Listen, they all need to win, right? I mean, let's not fool ourselves. All the three of these teams thought they were going to be good, and you could kind of feel that thing slipping away a little bit. You just got to figure out a way somehow to win a game. By the way, you saw the Hokies last week against BC. Boy, I tell you what, Virginia Tech has really, really been good. I know they had their tough weekend in Chapel Hill, but that offensive line's out of sight. Hendon Hooker, we had him on the show this week, has complete command of what they're doing. That is a good football team.
I totally agree. And like, North Carolina is going to move the ball and put points on a lot of teams. Like when they're clicking and when they're right, they're really good. And listen, obviously they had a hiccup last week, but that's a team with a lot of talent, a really good quarterback, you know, really good backs. And like I said, like when they're clicking offensively, it's I don't care who they're playing. I mean, they're going to be a challenge. So, look, that didn't work out for them. To your point about Virginia Tech, I think there's a toughness to their football team. It's certainly been synonymous with their program. Hendon Hooker is the best quarterback for that team right now. He's so careful with the football. He's the best passer of the group. He's a very good runner, as we saw against Boston College the other night. Khalil Herbert is a really good player. Their offensive line is outstanding, I believe, and they have depth there. And look, it's a team that, is kind of taking it on the chin a little bit with the COVID situation. I know they're not the only ones that have had that happen, but I do think it's presented some challenges both on the coaching staff and on the roster. And so, weathering the storm of that, I think it'll make them a pretty dangerous team down the stretch.
I think you're right. By the way, just so you know, Wes did say Pitt. He thought Pitt, as we said, it's kind of their Super Bowl this week, given what's happened in those, LLL. And now here comes Notre Dame trying to figure out how to throw the football downfield. Again, that offensive line against Pitt's defensive front will be really, really good and fun.
Yeah, and, I haven't seen them in person yet, but, like, that's another team that I just am surprised. I'm surprised how their secondary's played, surprised their receivers haven't kind of had, better opportunities. I understand that, like you said, it's all of them. To me, the one, though, is, like, I looked at Louisville as a team. I'm like, man, I love their talent. I love their coaching staff. I love, like, kind of the immediate buy-in and impact on the team. And that's just been really, really surprising.
By the way, if you could tell Dino Babers one thing, what would you tell him heading into Death Valley this weekend?
I think this, from just seeing, like, I'll use the Virginia game as the example. They're really good athletes on that football team. The game can get out of hand quickly. If you can just create opportunities to not hurt yourself, to have it be a game coming out of the locker room at halftime, I think it just changes the experience for your team and your program. I just go back to the game that we did. There's 5 minutes left. Virginia gets the ball and they throw in the first half and they throw an interception, and the game turns sideways on them right then and there. And, so I think you just – I think you have to take some chances, but at the same time, hurting yourself is the worst thing you can do when you play those guys because they make you pay for it.
Yep, you're right about that. Well, listen, have a great broadcast this weekend. We always appreciate the time.
All right, Pack, see ya.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Magic of television. We finally got Clifford away from the ESPN cable cords and put some duct tape on it. We're strapped on and ready to go. You all right down there in Georgia? Guys all right?
I'm fine. Yes, right. I'm fine. Yes.
Tim Hasselbeck says hello. He passes on well wishes.
Yeah, you killed me on the interview. You killed me. Said I didn't make a choice. I picked Pittsburgh.
I came back. I told him, for the record, you picked Pitt. I said that.
Made me sound like Switzerland.
No. No, you're not the Swiss. Wake Forest is the Swiss. That's the old Southern Fried football routine. We always used to call Wake Forest the Swiss. And people are like, why do you keep calling Wake Forest Switzerland? I said, because, simple. When Wake wins, everybody in the league's happy for Wake Forest when Wake wins. Everybody. I don't – State, Duke, Carolina. Oh, man, it's good for Wake. They're rocking and rolling. They're doing great. I mean, Wake's like the Swiss. That's why we used to – we had a guy that created on the Southern Fried Football Tour. We had all the flags and all this stuff and our RV. And a guy made a Switzerland flag, black and gold. I still have it. I can find it somewhere in here, I'm sure, in my storage unit here.
Oh, good.
But so we called Wake Forest Swiss, the Swiss. So it was a black and gold flag that we flew for Wake Forest. The Swiss, everybody likes Wake Forest. I don't know of anybody that dislikes Wake. Yeah. You don't ever hear anybody go, oh, my God, I can't stand Wake Forest. You've never heard that in your life. Seriously, in your life, Wes, have you ever heard that?
That's very true.
I know it's true.
That's very true.
And I'm not trying to offend anybody here. But, you know, every team in the league, you'll hear a fan base go, oh, I don't like fill in the blank. Their fans, their coach, their player, whatever, their stadium, their food. I mean, there's no excuse. You do not hear that about Wake Forest. Wake Forest is the only school in the league. You go to Syracuse, you go to Louisville, you go to Pitt. What do you think about Wake? Oh, we like the Wake. We like Wake Forest. We like the Deeks. Yeah. Just telling you.
There you go.
They're the Swiss. So don't, you can't take the Swiss ownership. That belongs to Wake Forest. Mm-hmm. I'm done.
Speaking of likable, Wake Forest wide receiver Ja'Cory Roberson joins us tomorrow.
Yeah, looking
forward
to that.
Had a big catch to set up a touchdown the other night in the win against Virginia. Look forward to talking to him. And king of the pick six in Tallahassee last Saturday night, Joshua Kando of Florida State, will join Packer and Durham tomorrow as well.
Nice.
And more on the games, including State Carolina, where, by the way, our friend Joe Giglio and Joe Ovius had say something nice about the rival this week on radio, which was pretty clever. They had Dick Bedore say something nice about NC State, and Debbie Yow, the retired AD at NC State, say something nice about Carolina.
You know what? You know what
which
the problem
is always
you know what
hilarious.
The problem with that is? You can't believe a word
What's
you
that?
Hear with that stuff. Those two do not like each other. I'm sitting here telling you about how nobody hates Wake. Those two, you will never hear an NC State fan go, oh, yeah, the Heels, they're all right. They're cool. I'm cool with the Heels. You'll never hear anybody from North Carolina go, oh, NC State, yeah, we like those guys. Mm-mm.
Yeah, no, you won't hear that.
Not happening.
Players of the week before we say goodbye on this show, volleyball, Marina Markova of Syracuse is the player of the week. Women's soccer, Clara Robbins, Florida State, Alexa Spanstra of Virginia on the offensive side, Caitlin Parks of Wake Forest on the defensive side, field hockey, Aaron Mattson of North Carolina, and Sid Taylor of Syracuse, offensive and defensive players, respectfully.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.